Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm a big fan of the craft of comedy, and I'm also a fan of when you find the intersection between things. So the fact that you've found an intersection between comedy and entrepreneurship is pretty cool. So to kick it off, how did you get into comedy?
Wow. So this was about 22. I don't know. This was a really long time ago, like a lifetime ago and then some. So what happened was, is I was working for a Fortune 500 corporation and I was doing a lot of public speaking, and I always had an interest in comedy. My family's really funny, and keeping up with them is just, you know, something else to be seen in it alone. But anyway, I was working for this company, and people had encouraged me maybe take a comedy class and things like that. And I had taken a class at the university. I was living in Vegas at the time, and I had gone to UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, for business. But then later I went back and took a continuing education class in comedy writing. And I thought, I'm going to use this when I do events. This is really helpful. And then later a coworker came into my office and said, you know, you should really think about taking some improv classes. And he goes, by the way, the Second City has a training center here in Las Vegas right now, which is, I know all about the Second City because I grew up in the Chicago area. And I was like, what? How did I not know this? And so I signed up for classes at the Second City in Las Vegas, and I took all the classes they offered in that training center. And then I took them all a second time, and some of them even a third time. And yeah, that's how I started going into it. And it was all after a divorce. And, yeah, so that kind of stuff that is, I ran into some personal challenges in life, but I had this wonderful job that I had a voice. They, you know, I had a place where I was speaking and doing things. I was allowed to be really creative. And yeah, and I decided after that second divorce, like, wow, I'm going to start saying yes to things other than, you know, proposals. and trying new things all the time. And that's kind of how I leaned into it. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go out and be a comedian. It was like, I just want to do things that are creative and different and not like what I had been doing. Yeah.
So was it quite, finding comedy, was it quite cathartic in a way? And are you more of a, were you telling more personal stories? Was that kind of your style?
Yeah, it was super cathartic. And I've always loved writing. Like in school, those were my better classes, you know, math and science. Ah, okay, I did well. But when it came to reading and writing and things like that, like that's my lane. And so I really loved it. And yeah, there was something about it. I remember coming back home from my first improv class and I was like, this, I'm doing this. I'm not taking just this class. I'm taking all the classes. Like I was just instantly in love. There was something about it that was so freeing and fun. Like we would just laugh all the time. You know, I think about like now I'm not currently taking classes and different, like when I was doing comedy in New York and stuff, like I had laughter in my life all day, all the time. Not that there wasn't any stress and it was all rosy, but there's something about it that's so freeing and life changing. Yeah, it was incredible. So, and it was very cathartic. I wrote a whole one woman show.
I did that.
Right. And then I did that. And I was, people are like, are you going to keep doing it and extending it? And I was like, I've been writing it for over a year. And then I performed it for over a year. And I was like, I don't know. I think I need to write about something else. I kind of got that out of my system, but it was so helpful in giving new perspective. It was extremely cathartic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think comics are often told by other people that they're funny and they maybe don't realize it? And then there's other people who perhaps think they can do it, but they don't maybe have the, it's the kind of that thing that's undescribable. Have you found that?
Yes. So there's a lot of people who will show up, especially when I started doing comedy online, before COVID, and then COVID happened. And then people who'd never done comedy would show up and they're like, my friends tell me I'm really funny. And I think I love it when new people show up. I think that inspires me. It keeps me going, you know, because I was new at one time too. And it was because people said, hey, you're funny. You should probably check this out. But being funny in front of our friends is different than doing stand-up. It is there are skills that you can take from that and apply on stage, but a lot of people who are new think they can get up on stage and tell those same stories the way they would tell their friends and that they're going to be funny. And the difference is if I'm buying a ticket for $25 and then have to spend money on two drinks, you better be funnier than you are with your friends. And also, you know, when we talk to our friends, we tell stories like you have to know these people for it to make sense to us. And it's really not that funny.
That's what I admire about the craft. I mean, when you go to a stand-up show, it's like the room is almost like, I mean, they want to laugh, but they're almost like, you got to make me laugh. And there's that initial kind of early stage where it's like, can this comedian, like, and it's such a precipice. It's such a treacherous precipice, which is what's awesome about it. I mean, I played in bands all through my youth, and there was a lot of bombing on stage in like kind of rock bands. And I can very much relate to that visceral feeling with the crowd and when things go wrong, sinking or that was kind of my experience into the world of like public bombing and like getting back up and improving. So I can relate to it from a band sense. And I took one improv class here in Germany, and I really loved it. Like you say, like it was, to me, it just felt like really pushing back against fear and that whole saying yes. And just, like you say, just the laughter and the kind of community was really awesome. But, I didn't kind of go on from there with that.
You know, you hit on two things. Like in the improv class, I found it was, you know how when we're kids, we would go out and we'd play and we'd use our imagination and we could be anything, we could say anything, and we would just be in the zone of like having fun and playing. And that's how I feel about improv. I'm like, I feel like I'm 5 or 6 years old again and like just in a room and anything could be possible. But when it comes to bombing on stage, and you're right, like, it's even whether you're playing music or doing stand-up, you have to get the audience on your side from the beginning. And so I think that's another thing that's really important in learning the craft is like how to put I think there's an art to putting a running order together. So whether you're in a band and you put your set together, same thing when we do our sets for comedy, you have to come out of the gate strong and you have to have a joke that is going to be relatable to people, bring people over, you know, attract people to you before you can get into your more edgier jokes. Same with like, if you're a band, you're not going to come out with like, you've never heard of me having to do a slow ballad original. No, it's like, no, I'm probably going to do something that's a little bit more catchy or like familiar to bring you over. So to prove myself to you, and then I can work my way into that safe zone of trying something new or taking you close to your discomfort zone, you know? So yeah, there's so much involved other than just being funny to somebody. And it's a science, it's an art, and it's kind of all mixed together in one thing.
Yeah, for sure. I can understand the structure of it and approaching it like a set, you know, the way we used to structure sets and stuff. How do you not come out like, I just remember we had a singer once and no discredit to her, but she was trying to fill the space between songs, and she would literally say like, "Hey guys, this is like our fifth last song. This is our fourth last song." And I had to pull her up and say, "They're not here for a countdown. It's not like we have to say, sorry guys, there's only five to go." Right. You know, but she was learning how to navigate that. So you're absolutely right. Like telling stories to your friends or playing music to your friends is a whole different kettle of fish to engaging and winning over an audience. And I've seen stand-up routines where comics come out and offend the audience immediately and they lose them within and I'm like, gosh, like you can't really offend them within the first 5 seconds or you're finished, you know?
Yeah. So true. It's like, ooh, how are they going to come back from this? I mean, I've had to go out on stage after a comedian walked an entire like three or four tables right in front of the stage. And I'm like, oh, you just left so much work for me. How do I bring them back from what the mess you just left? Yeah, it's, oh yeah, so true.
There's also
a point. Oh, go ahead.
Have you also found there's an energy on set stage? There's like a residual, and I often used to walk into like a kind of thick cloud, and whether it was just the fact like a punk band had been like sweating or whatever, it was almost like I had to do some kind of ceremonial clearing before I, like not in a woohoo kind of way, but it was almost like I had to be aware of what had gone on before stepping on there. But sometimes you just didn't have the time.
It's very true. Like I agree with you 100%. I think there's a benefit to being aware and being present before you go on stage. And I always find it interesting to watch other comedians. I know a lot of people, if they book several things in an evening, or they're going around and doing a bunch of mics, they'll show up, they'll do their spot, they'll leave, but they'll only show up like right before they go on, they'll leave right after. And I get it. But at the same time, I find it so beneficial to show up as the show starts and stay slightly thereafter, you know, or until the end. Because one, I learn a lot from that experience, but also there's so much, it informs me more of when I do step on stage, what's the vibe of the room, what's happened before me, what do I need to be aware of? Like, is this a hostile audience or, you know, is it a friendly audience? Also, is there opportunity to call back other things that had already happened? And audiences they seem to really like that. Like, oh, you know, like, yeah, you're bringing back other things and threading the needle and bringing it all together. I think there's opportunity for that. And same with you though, like it would be the same, I guess. Yeah. For a musician, like getting on stage after, you know, if it, again, it sets the tone of like, what can I expect from these people I'm about to perform? Do I need to adjust what I'm going to say? You know, because sometimes if somebody's already offended or like completely bombed, you kind of have to kind of rethink of how you're going to revive the room or something.
There's a level of adaptability both in the performance and to the room, and like, I guess, having to be malleable to the, but yeah, like for me, it was always the things that went down, the things that broke. And I was actually on the drums, so I was always protected behind the drums, in a way. But then when I went to London and it was a three-piece, suddenly I didn't have a singer in front of me and the two guys were on the sides and I felt very, very exposed in that way. But so it was all really, really healthy. But, yeah, I imagine you'd have to be adaptable and there's just so many layers to it, like you say, whether you hang around the community of comics. I imagine that would just be awesome, similar to bands, to have, you know, a lineup and you're all hanging out and have this community going on.
Yeah, it is very nice. I think it's super important. I think there's so much to be learned in that, and also watching other people, you know.
Yeah, whether observing. They're good or not.
yeah.
No, you always pick up something through just observation. There's so much to learn from observation. So how did the plausible call it a platform? How did the plausible platform? It's essentially an online comedy platform. And is it the first of its kind?
As far as I know, I mean, I think some other people have come up with like similar ideas and way to get comedians' names out there and do things, but nothing exactly like what I have. What I did is when I started comedy, I was in Vegas. I'm originally from the Chicago area. I was living in Vegas for like 16 years. And then I moved to New York City to pursue comedy full time. And I ran open mics and I did shows and all the things, right? And eventually I moved to the West Coast. So 3,000 miles away. I was in LA area and I was like, I spend so much more time on the freeway than any stage. What is happening? What is wrong with this picture? Mm. And so I started taking things online to solve that problem. Like, how do I bridge this gap? Cause I can't drive an hour and a half. Cause anywhere in LA, if anyone's been there, you know, like it takes an hour to go 2 miles. It's insane. Leave ridiculous. And the traffic is so bad. So how do I bridge that gap and get more time to work out material and jokes and practice and also network with the community without having to spend zillions of dollars on gas and hours of my life in traffic? And so I started doing things with existing technologies. So this was in like summer of 2019 BC, before COVID, right?
End of the world.
Before the end of the world, before everything changed our lives forever. And a bunch of comedians from the East Coast and West Coast were like, oh, this is great. You know, we can connect, we can practice, we can do things. And then I started sharing it with comics I didn't know. And they're like, why would I do that? That's stupid. And then COVID happened and they're like, oh, we should all do that. And then so everybody started doing stuff online with, you know, things like Zoom or Google Meets or Teams and things like that, right? But then we were presented with new problems, because although those technologies are fantastic and got us through a pandemic, we also recognize like we have other needs as performers and audio needs and different types of video setup and whatnot. And I was like, wow. The other thing that I saw people doing is, you know, I mean, as a performer, you know, we do a lot of things for free, exposure, as they call it, right? Or we get paid with a burger and a beer. But that doesn't sustain us. And we have to have all these day jobs and stuff. So I'm thinking of all the things that I've encountered over the years. And I'm like, there has to be a way in which we can take this technology and we could bridge a gap and give, kind of democratize the system in which we don't have to have the gatekeepers anymore telling us if we're passed at a club or we can have these venues. But what if we have the opportunity to hone our skills and get better so that we can get passed at the in-person clubs? But in between, we can get more connection and do this. And I'm like, okay, so what if I build this platform and it's online and people from anywhere in the world can create a free account and they can have access to the scheduling tools, the virtual stage, they can either do it for free if they choose to, or they can use our ticketing services and set up a price and put a price in there and have people purchase a ticket to see them. And then instead of it all going to the club and them getting paid with a burger or beer or just exposure, they get the majority of that sales revenue in their pocket. Why can't we do that? And that's what I built Plausible to do, is to solve those problems that I was experiencing. And then as I started taking it online and talking to even more people, they're like, yeah, we need that. And so that's how I ended up building Plausible, is so that we can give more opportunity to people to do their art.
That's really awesome. As it got like the ability to work out and work the muscle and get feedback and have all these different angles within it for a performance or for, and you're right, it's just that the gatekeepers thing, you know, this waiting for permission to be creative and knocking on the door and saying, please, you know, I've been through it with auditions, but we're just in a day and age where it feels like you can very much take it into your own hands. I was just reading the Duplass Brothers book, and they were saying there was a period there where they had like 100 general meetings. And out of the 100 general meetings, they had one small project or something. And they basically made an agreement that instead of having general meetings, they were going to use that time to write. So it's very similar to what you're saying. And instead of sitting in the car for hours on end, how can you make a better use of that that time, which is the most precious commodity we have? And then, yeah, hopefully help artists generate income directly to them. So it's a really cool concept.
And the other thing, you know, we find ourselves doing all this stuff on social media. Again, it's great. We put ourselves out there, but in order to monetize it for ourselves, we have to have thousands upon thousands of followers, right? In order to get a sponsorship, and then you get pennies on the dollar for, then you have to get so many views for everything. Like, there's these pretty big hurdles for most people to do. And we end up spending all of our time creating content in hopes to achieve these really big goals in it. And some people do, but majority of people, they're not influencers making a full living. You know, as nice as their photos may look, what is it, you know, pull back the curtain. Are they, you know, are they making the money you think they are? Probably not. And that's what I find when I talk to most people. And that's why, again, with Plausible, like, why not, instead of creating content of like, what kind of bagel did you have this morning? Why don't you like your comedy and do a good show and get paid for your comedy show? And on a platform like this, you can, even if just one person buys a ticket, you can earn money from that ticket, versus you have to have a minimum of 1,000 people buy a ticket before you get any money from that. So I wanted to flip that business model on its head and, you know, make it more accessible to people, especially like, you're in Hamburg, right?
Mm.
How many opportunities are in Hamburg versus like a New York City or something, right? Or a bigger city near you. If you can't get there because of geographics, that puts another barrier up to you. What if you can do the stuff you're doing in your city, but also expand and monetize what you're doing globally from home without having to pack two suitcases and move your entire life?
For sure. The term content, I really dislike it, because it's it kind of undermines the artist. It's like, I'm just going to make content and make content and make content. And I think often we don't realize that, like, a lot of the time eyeballs aren't even on it because of the, you know, the advertising. And then if people are basing their self-worth on something that actually isn't getting the eyeballs that they think it's getting, it's really dangerous, because you have this false perception of posting something and thinking that it's being seen. And again, it's just this, why not put that energy into to what you're saying and yeah, rather than talk about the bagel, what you had for breakfast, work at the craft. And you're right, being here in Hamburg, sometimes I feel quite isolated as an Australian, and to have access to the stuff that's going on here, but then to be able to branch out globally is very cool.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you too on the content creator title. It's like, wow, that's like, you know, suddenly I'm a social media coordinator for something, but really what I want to be doing is comedy. Yeah, yeah. I agree. It's a whole rabbit hole of doing all this other stuff, and we don't know what people are really thinking. And that's like you, like there's a magic of doing stuff in person. I don't think in person can ever be replicated, honestly. Mm. I think that's just human connection. That's a need we'll always have. But I do think that if we're going to connect online, I want to be able to see and hear you. I want to be able to have, like, acknowledge that, oh, it's a real person, and it's not just, you didn't just like swipe up through your feed at me and that counted as an impression. Like, I want to be like, oh, they actually logged in, they're listening. I can see, I can put a face to the name. I can connect in that level. Yeah, there's just, it's so important as an artist to know what people are really feeling when we're sharing what we've worked on, you know?
I think what you're doing with Plausible actually is a much truer form of connection, as opposed to what the big social media platforms are selling, which is connection, and actually nobody feels connected. Whereas you're using the technology in a really balanced way too. Like you're acknowledging that nothing will replace like a real audience, but like you said earlier, it can be a platform to feed into that and to prep for that and to set up for that. So it's like it's a nice balance, and it's a more authentic, not just sound bites and stuff. And it feels like social media, you know, if it could be reframed to be like the signpost to your art or whatever you're doing, as opposed to the thing that you're trying to put your art on. That's the way I'm trying to, you know, treat it more as a signpost than this all-consuming thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it completely makes sense. I agree. I feel like those should be like the pathway to get to you, not the destination. You know, the social media should be driving traffic to you to see you in some sort of real-time event versus that being the end all.
Like you've articulated it far better than that's nice.
teamwork makes the dream.
Well, yeah, I mean, collaboration, that's the there's such beauty in collaboration, and often as an artist, a comedian, a performer, writing, like, it's such a battle with self and a battle with the blank page, and you know, to be able to collaborate using the technology is what's your do you have a writing process? Like, how's that for you?
Yeah. So when I was, it's different for different projects. When I was writing my one person show, I was living in New York, and I put myself on a regular, like, kind of work schedule, so that I'd get up in the morning, go to the gym, do that. And then by a certain time, I would have to be somewhere writing, and I would block out that 4 or 5 hours at a time where I was just writing. And I gave myself to permission to just write. It wasn't editing. It wasn't, judging anything. It was just getting all the words down on paper, because editing is a different muscle. It changes, it uses up a different space in my brain. And so I would just allow myself every single day this block of time to write. And then in the afternoon, that's when I would do any editing, I would do any marketing, any of those other things for my show. But when I write jokes just in general for stand-up, I don't do that. I find that I it's more of going to open mics, coming up with a few ideas, kind of working out things there. And I get more inspired when I'm doing actively. And I can also find, like, I used to rearrange furniture in my house. So like if I would be actively doing something or paint a wall or I don't know, sometimes it'll come to me when I'm driving or right before I fall asleep at night. I'll give my best jokes right before I fall asleep. And I'm like, oh, I should write that down. Where's my notebook? You know, and I used to keep a notebook right on my nightstand. Because if I didn't write them down, I would inevitably never remember them. So yeah, I find it, they come at weird times, and it's when I'm doing something creative with my hands, like something. Yeah. Where I'm not forcing anything. It's like where my mind is free to wander and I'm doing something else that I find very cathartic.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, that's cool. Like get the hands busy, and then that frees up the thinking as opposed to like trying to force it. But yeah, it's classic because you like you sit there for the 5 hours or whatever, and you which is important, very important too. But then bang, 2:51 a.m. on a Tuesday night, something's. Yeah. I'm the same actually. I consciously try and get up now. Like if that call it that lightning bolt hits on whatever it is, like I'm like, okay, I got to get up and like note it, or it's. As you said, it's gone. But it's very, I just think it's very bold, very brave to work things out on stage at open mics. Because yeah. I think you know, a lot of the fear would be, you know, I know it from acting in terms of just like the preparation really helps. Just the more prepared. But when it's like, oh, I'm going to actually gauge some of these stages, that's brave.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I found with open mics, and a lot of times people use the word open mic synonymously with a show. And I don't view a true open mic as a show at all. Like if I were not an artist and I walked into an open mic like that I would go to, I'd be like, what is happening right now? This stuff is bananas. Because open mic, and I ran an open mic for over 7 years in New York. And what I love about it is if you go to a good open mic, you can do anything and nobody's judging you. Most of the time, most of the people in the room aren't listening. I'll be honest, like, they are in the shadowy corners of a basement of a bar. That's where the mics are held. And they're just like on their phones taking notes. And, you know, when I started, it was people actually had notebooks, like with a pen.
Oh, gosh.
And everybody, we just carry these little tiny notebooks around, like, you know, and then in our pockets or in our purse. And then we'd pull them out and we'd be like, oh, I have this idea. So at a mic, people were doing that kind of stuff. Like they would use it as inspiration. They'd sit there. They'd write while they're there. I mean, some people will pull out a laptop and plug it in and work. And that's because you when you're hearing other people, right, you kind of, it just, you're in the zone. But also, I kind of digress there for a minute. Sorry. But when I ran my mic, what I found was fascinating. I had a lot of regulars. And I think that's important, is finding a place where you're comfortable. And you know, like, these people aren't going to be upset if I try something and it totally is not right, or it's crass or it's wrong, or because we have to trust one another to be like, yeah, probably shouldn't say that, you know, or maybe you could say this, but maybe if you take it from this point of view. And we need that kind of feedback and friends and colleagues that can be candid and honest with us. But the other thing I notice sometimes in mics, depending on what's going on in the world, is people come in and they'll get up and they're like, I had stuff I wanted to work on, but I have to get this. I have to talk about this right now. And I've had people cry. I've had people very upset. It's interesting because as a host of a mic, I'm like, oh no. But again, this goes to being aware of the room, like what's happening to the room. And it changes the dynamics. Yes. But what happens is I love that. I'm always curious. It's like someone going to be upset, like, what happened? I thought this was going to be funny, but that's never happened. It's like, wow, that person really said something that I wish I would have said or talked about, or that I was kind of thinking about touching on, but I didn't have the courage to talk about it. Now we can all, now it's cracked open. We can all talk about it. And I think that really good comedy comes from a very vulnerable place and a very truthful place. And so people say tragedy plus time equals comedy. And so to have a spot where someone could go and feel safe and talk about, and I don't think that should happen every time, because then it just becomes like this group therapy session. That's not what an open mic is. But there are times that over the years where something has happened that's unexpected or that's taken place in the world, and it just kind of cracks everybody wide open, and it's another place of connection. And then inevitably someone will put a zinger out there and have release that tension and have the whole room laughing. But I think that's important too, you know?
It's the beauty of the craft. And I think there's perhaps a misconception about that vulnerability, that, oh, how can you make us laugh by being vulnerable? But that trust and that openness, I've experienced that in martial arts, actually. Confronting a situation with an openness the openness actually can defuel, because it's very confronting if somebody's being hostile and the other person reacts in a way of being open. It can actually defuel the situation, which sounds counterintuitive. But as you say, like a balance between all the stuff, but yeah, when people have the ability to go with the moment and change up what they've planned, that takes a certain level of courage as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I see that in music too. When we think of artists we really love the most, they make us feel something, you know, and they write from their own personal experience or heartbreak or thing. Like, how many songs are written about heartbreak? All of them, right?
99%.
Yeah. Even films, when we want, you know, look at films that we love and adore because they make us feel something, you know, they come from a place. There's always some sort of conflict and resolution and things of that nature. And I think, you know, we're pulled to that because we experienced that in our own life. And it's like, how do we make sense of those things? How do we put that in a place in our brain that we can comprehend and wrap arms around it?
Yeah, without going down an AI rabbit hole, which happens on many, many podcasts. I just think what you're saying, like, for me, things can be replicated like closely, but you cannot replicate human story and personal experience. That's what I'm holding on to the faith of, is that this, call it machine, can replicate very closely. And I know it's happening in comedy where it's like, write me a stand-up piece by a comic, but it cannot replicate your perspective and your experience and what you said earlier about time and pain equaling, you know, where you're at. I don't think I could be telling myself that, but that's what I'm holding on to a faith in, that adamantly.
Yeah,
with the sword.
Right? There's the artist in me is like, oh, no, that can never happen. I don't want that to happen. And then the other part of me that is involved in the tech world is like, that's totally possible. That's a possibility. Like, get real. And where do those two intersect? But I do think that, honestly, there's a human connection. There's something on a much deeper level at that we, that's that special sauce, you know?
It's the special sauce.
Ingredient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sweet sauce. And that's hard to define. And I think it happens in whether it's a band or comedy or film. I think that thing that's hard to define, that's the secret sauce. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to protect that. That needs to be like, you know, bottled and put in a secret vault somewhere that can't be replicated, because I think that's kind of like, that's the key to life. I can't imagine, like, what's fascinating about the whole tech portion of it is like, I love it because we can use it as tools to connect to people we wouldn't normally be connected to because of geographics. But at the same time, where do you draw that line, you know, of, you know, when is it too much, and when is it? And that's why I'm thinking, and when I set out to build Plausible, it's like, I can't replicate, nor do I want to replicate in person. I think this should be an extension of that. This should be practice so that even when you're, for whatever reason, you're not able to get out of your house today, you can still connect with people on some level and hone your skills. Or if you don't have the luxury, like I did, to pick up and move across, you know, 3,000 miles, all of a sudden, to pursue your dream, you can still pursue your dream work from wherever you are. I think that's a gift, you know, and really making things more accessible. And even the people on the other side who can't get out, like, oh my gosh, we learned about so many people, especially after the pandemic, of like, thank goodness, you know, we can connect online, because I can't leave my house because I have an autoimmune disease, or I have other issues that prevent me from doing so. And all of a sudden they're like, everything is in their home and on their TV or on their device. So I think there's, I don't know, there's so many things we could, like, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I'm out of that rabbit hole now. I'm out
in my. Well, I think, I just know it from living here in Germany, like being in a foreign country. When I first came here, I thought, oh, I really have to, like, I think whatever city you move to, it's like, I have to adapt to that city. So I have to find work in that city. I have to do the way of that city. And for me, it's been so challenging here, in many ways. But then with technology and everything, I've been like, I don't, with the nature of the world, the small world now and technology, I can live here because I love this city, but I can also sit a little bit outside of it artistically in terms of what I'm trying to do. And, you know, what you're saying about generating your own income through your platform and everything, there's so much opportunity to do that regardless of the city you're in. So I've had to get out of this mindset of, oh, I'm in Hamburg. Of course I have to in there's unavoidable. I can't just be an island in the city.
Yeah.
I'm in, but a balance between all of it, you know, the technology is really helping be like independent on a globe, because I want to be globally like independent so that I can live anywhere. That's and I think that's a realistic goal these days, especially with platforms like yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so. I certainly hope so. People move around so much, really. Yeah. Like most people I know, like growing up, most people never left the hometown. And now most people can't imagine staying in their hometown.
Mm.
You know, you go where the work is, or you go off where your partner is, or whatever. And yeah, I don't know. It's so strange. It's such a different world.
It is. And life throws different things at you. You move to a city expecting one thing, and then you end up with something. As you say, you had to find a solution to your own artistic challenge. And that's the beauty of it. It moved you toward that.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I would love to say like, oh, I had this big plan and this is how I got here. But the truth is, it was a lot of big mistakes or failures or problems that got me here. Thank goodness, you know, because I may have not had the motivation or inspiration to do something different than what I had been doing before. And so, for instance, like when you asked, like, how did I get into comedy? Like, technically, that's how I got into comedy. But all of that stemmed from, if I think back, it's because I went through this painful divorce and I didn't want my life to look like that anymore. I wanted to do things completely different. And I made a list of all these random things that popped into my head one afternoon. I'm like, I'm going to do those things. And I'm going to, and when other people suggest things to me that I'm like, no way, I'm going to go, yes, and start doing them. And that's kind of what I had this moment in my bedroom where I was crying and I was really sad. And I had this thought and I'm like, I'm going to do things different. And then suddenly comedy came up and that became a thing. And then when I moved to New York, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to move to New York and do these things. And I have a plan. I had zero plan. What happened was, is I had been at a job for almost 13 years living in Vegas and I loved my job. I love the people I worked with. I love my job. I thought I'll be there forever. And then one day I found out I was laid off and the industry was changing. And I was one of the first people that ended up getting laid off, which made sense because of what my job was. And I didn't know what to do with myself. And they're like, we're giving you a couple months advance notice. Don't say anything yet. So I just continued going into work. And one day, one of my friends from the theater called and said, hey, I'm going to go to New York this summer. I got a sublet. Do you want to share it with me? And I was like, oh, I'll think about it. And he goes, you just told me you were laid off. And you always said if you didn't have that job, you would move to New York. And I was like, oh, they're calling me out on it, you know, on it. And I go, well, I'll think about it. He goes, you have 1 hour.
Wow.
So I went for a walk. I came back. I called and I said, I'm in. Because again, I'm like, I promised myself that. And someone called me out. I said I would do it. Now I have to do it. And a month later, I packed up 2 suitcases and I moved to New York City. I had no idea what I was doing, but I did it. And thank God I didn't know what I was getting into because I wouldn't have gone. But it ended up because it was hard. It was very hard, but I loved it. And I have no regrets that I did it. But I think sometimes life throws those curveballs because the universe puts these things there in place to do for me what I can't do for myself. Mm. And as it happened the way it did, I said yes, and I went. And same when I moved from New York eventually to the West Coast, same thing. People are like, oh, did you move there for your comedy? And I'm like, well, I guess you could say that. I moved there for a man, and that turned out to be a joke. You know, it wasn't, I wish I had this master plan that, yeah, this is what I was doing, but that wasn't the case. I moved out there for all the wrong reasons. And then when I got there and everything instantly fell apart, like within 2 months, like he broke up with me. It was just like, I had already given up my place in New York and, you know, do I move back? And I'm like, I just started producing shows and making the best of the terrible situation I was in on the West Coast, and ended up being a great thing because it was there that I started doing things online. It was there that I met my now husband, right? Like within a few months of the breakup, I ended up meeting the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. And I went back to school there. Like all of these really cool things happened, but I wish I could take credit for planning, but I planned none of that.
What's that saying? You know? What's that saying about if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans or something?
Exactly. Kind of what it is.
The timing of things is really classic, and sometimes it's, and in hindsight, it makes sense. In hindsight, you're like, oh, that's why that. But at the time, you're like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah.
That's exactly what goes through my mind. Most of the time, it's like, what is happening right now? Someone has to have a plan, and it's not me. And, you know.
But the ability, the ability to pivot as well, I think, is important, like to see things and pivot if you have to in a kind of constructive way like you have here.
Yeah. And there I've done, I pivot a lot. I have shoes just for pivoting.
Pivot shoes. I love it.
I got my pivot shoes. This is what I do. You know, if I make a 5-year plan, like where do I want to be in 5 years? It'll never look like that. You know, I will say this, there is a benefit I'm a big fan of setting goals. I love setting goals, and a lot of them, like, I'll achieve, but it's amazing to look back on a piece of paper and be like, I want to do these things. And then, like, I did this once when I was living in Vegas. And then, like, 5 years later, when I was moving, I found all of these lists. And I was like, whoa, I did all of those things. I had written it down, forgot about it, and I had done all of those things on that list. And now, you know, I put them in front of me and I pay attention. And although I'm striving towards these things, sometimes those things aren't the things I achieve, but they open doors to things I hadn't ever considered before. And I think that's the beautiful part of the journey, is it's not just the destination. It's not a matter of checking things off a list, but being open to what comes next. You know, start moving towards something. It's like driving across the country or traveling somewhere. And like the first time I went to Europe, this was way back in 2000. So I bought a Frommer's guide and I told someone that I was going, and she's like, before I bought the Frommer's guide, she's like, where in Europe? And I'm like, I don't know. I just picked a country and I said, Italy. And she's like, great. I always wanted to go. And so I was like, okay. And she's like, what are you going? I go, I don't know, July. And she was like, I'm in. I was like, oh crap. I have no plan, but I just told somebody. So I bought this Frommer's guide. We picked a date and I faxed off, I want to confirm a room reservations, but I had no fax. So they didn't fax me back. And I don't know if it was confirmed. And we bought a plane ticket and showed up. And they're like, who are you?
And then you just had to go with it.
Yeah, we just went with it. We had the best time. And I think it's about do it. Like for me, my life, my best experience have come from that. Like have a general plan, but don't be so tied to the outcome or the possibilities that you may find within that to get there. Like be open to take a different path or go down a road less traveled, right?
It's really awesome. Yeah, it's really awesome to travel through like countries in Europe, and then like if you like a place, have that window to stay, as opposed to this, like, well, otherwise you just end up like running from one train booking to the next and one site to the other, and it's just anxiety provoking, I think. So yeah, it's awesome to just try and go with it. But I love the pivot shoes thing. I have a big pair of pivot shoes as well.
You do? Yeah.
Yeah. I pivot constantly. But I think
way of life, right?
Yeah. I think the willingness to pivot, like you say, it shows you, opens other things and stuff.
We need a name. Sorry.
Please.
We need a name for ourselves, like the pivoteers, or what are we? You're a pivoter. Are you a pivoter? Are we just called pivoters, or is there like pivotettes?
Pivotettes. Yeah. There's lots that could come off it. The pivot. I like pivot shoes.
Yeah.
Where put your pivot shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
That might lead nicely into call it a tradition on the show to have guests offer a challenge, but I'm really open to like, given everything we've discussed, does anything spring to mind that you might, given your experience and your journey, can be anything really, that is there a challenge that you'd like to offer?
Yes, I have one actually.
Awesome.
This is a really fun one. I challenge the listeners to go out today and try to fail at something. Go, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to totally fail and see what happens. And I had to do this once. I had a coach challenge us to go out today and do something that you think you're going to fail at and be okay. Yeah, just know you're going to fail and go out and do that. And I think there's so much freedom and going out and doing something that, you know, you're not attached to the outcome. It's like, oh, the odds of this coming true, but putting yourself out there is so freeing.
Yeah, that's an awesome one. Yeah, it really is. With the intention of like, well, knowing that you're going to fail at it, like that's, I always say it's where massive amounts of growth happens, just in that. The wins are awesome, but it's really in the falling flat on the face that where the resilience, the growth, and the reward. Like, I didn't die, you know. Like, it's right? Okay. I so got like, through.
Right? Like, if you're thinking about, I should go to this open mic, but I know I'll totally bomb. Great. Today is you have permission to go do that. If you want to ask that person out that you'd probably think, oh, they're so out of my league, go ask that person out. If you, whatever that is, like, you know, I'm going to go write a song, or I'm going to spend time writing poetry, or I'm going to call somebody, or I'm going to do this, you know, propose this idea to my boss. You know, today is the day. Go out and do it, and you have total permission to fail.
Permission to fail. And put the pivot shoes on after, but permission to fail is that's that's
because you know what, you're gonna have a great story.
I've always thought that, like, when things are going to shit, I'm like, this is gonna make a good story. Like, that's the main thing, you know. That's I don't know if everyone thinks so like true. That.
Yes, you know. Okay, when you were asking me about the writing process. If my life is upside down, I have so much to write about. But when things are good and they're boring, I'm like, I don't know, the weather? I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. So where can people find and register on Plausible? How's that?
So yeah, you can go to plausible.com, and that's plausazzable.com, because all the other spellings were taken. who's buying up all the domains? Yeah. So go to plausible.com. You can create a free fan account, or if you're a comedian or a performer and you want to do something on Plausible, sign up as a comedian. Again, if you've not ever done comedy, here's your chance to fail. Show up.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, bloody domain names. Every time I come up with something and it's gone. And you're like, this is unique. This is really unique. And then you go to thething.com, taken. It's like, what the?
Right? It's so true. I'm like, this is, but I went through literally 10 pages of name ideas. and not just like making one column of names. It was like, you know, where you write all over the front and back of a paper, 10 pages of ideas. But I'm so, you know what? I it took me a long time to get there, but I love Plausible, because like, be plausible.
No, it's true. It's great. It's a great name. Yeah, it's a classic. You could come up with like fat unicorn rainy day or something, and you type it in and be like, that username's taken. It's like, by who?
Like, seriously? What is this person who owns all of these domains, like, you know? And then I go to the website and they're like, we'll sell this to you for $2,000. Like, how about you just go back to the dictionary and pick a few more rando words? Like, that's what I did. Someone, I was like, what about all the onomatopoeia words, right? Like zoom or boom or pow or whatever. Someone actually bought every onomatopoeia word that is existence that I could possibly think of. I wonder if the.com is taken.
com.com, all of it. Yeah, it's crazy. I used to like MySpace for bands, you know. You'd put your music and your shows on there, and then it was cool. It was kind of primitive internet stuff.
Love that.
Mm. It was cool because you had fans.
Oh, I was on MySpace. Had like your top five or top eight. Yeah.
Yeah. You could put a bit of graphics. You could put your shows on there. Your fans would, it was, yeah. That was cool.
I love that. And you could put your theme song on there so that when people went to your page, you knew, like, it had this whole vibe. I love
yeah.
that. Tom.
Yeah.
Tom was always in my top eight.
Good old Tom. Well, it's been a real pleasure. I could honestly, we could go longer. So perhaps have to do it again sometime, but I really appreciate your insights.
Thank you. And it was so nice to be on here. Thank you for picking my brain and, you know, what a great conversation. I would love to come back.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.